Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn, host of this, The Maggie Dawn Show, here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We've dedicated today's program to cyber threats to our families, to our kids, to ourselves. And we're going to expand that discussion into much bigger questions of national security, election security, our infrastructure. We've got a fabulous expert with us. His name is Dave Schrader. He's the UW Madison Research Director for the Wisconsin Security Research Consortium, which is home to the Wisconsin Information Security Center. I love a good acronym salad. We'll just call Dave a cyber dork. His words, not mine. Thank you so much, Dave. We've been talking about how people can help secure their own online presence, the sort of hallmarks of these scams to look out for, the creating a false sense of urgency, often appearing to come from a family member or close friend, ultimately all inexorably moving towards two outcomes, which is directly separating you from your money or getting you to give up sensitive information that then allows them to access your money. It's always about the money.
That's right.
So I'll just make this observation at a really high level. It seems to me that in all governments, technology leads and we then struggle to catch up with it. And we're legislating sort of from behind where the apex or the front of the technology is. And that has certainly been the case when it comes to, for example, the crime of sextortion. Revenge porn, another thing that people, you know, gosh, what do we do about this? These were adults. And certainly it also falls in this area of just trying to secure people's personal information and what are the responsibilities of these platforms on which information is shared and these schemes are carried out. Dave, you're an expert. You study this way more than I could ever hope to get even a small slice of understanding about. When you think of really common sense policy or legislation that we should be talking about and asking our elected officials about, what are some, what I term low-hanging, obvious, yes, we need to do that policy or legislation?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And, you know, part of the reason why this does not exist is because it's hard. It's hard to do. And not everyone's going to agree on how to do it. And there are, there's compelling commercial interests on the side of all these platforms that, you know, don't want legislation that stops them from doing various things. And so what we end up with is this patchwork of laws that are different in every state, and some states don't have them at all, whether it is on things like privacy or sextortion or cybersecurity, and they're very reactive in nature, and it creates this situation that we're in now, where it feels like, you know, things are happening only after the fact, and that technology is kind of running away with everything, and that's a true, you know, even more so with things like artificial intelligence and the things that you see with deepfakes and right. And revenge porn that used to be, you know, actual, sensitive pictures of someone that are now just, you know, completely
AI.
Made up.
Yep.
Yeah. They're made with AI, and there's, and, you know, one tool goes away and two new tools pop up. So, you know, to get to your question though, of what can be done from a policy standpoint, I think that legislators, whether it's in a state, or at the federal level, need to find things that we can agree on in a bipartisan way. And I think that protection of children online is one of the things that we can all get behind. And so one thing I wanted to talk about that wasn't touched on at all so far during this conversation is that the platforms could make this a lot harder for scammers with some pretty simple things. And I'll give you one example. One of them is, and obviously people can use, you know, fake birth dates and all those things. But if you come on and create, like, let's say an Instagram account as a 14-year-old or something like that, and you use your real birth date, which a lot of kids do when they're creating their account, You know, it knows that it's a child's account. It could make the account private by default, direct messages private by default, and that one change alone would stop a lot of this in its tracks. And I just want to also mention to parents or you know, kids who are listening or anyone who has an account, you can, you know, make these changes to your account. And as a parent, it is really incumbent on us to take the time to understand how these things work, you know, whether it's the parental controls on iOS or Android, or the settings in things like Instagram and TikTok. And so, you know, you can sit down and say, okay, look, let's make the account private. Let's make sure that the DMs are set to only people that you know or that you're connected to. And, you know, the Yahoo boys and a lot of the scammers, they're just going to move on to the next target who doesn't have a private Instagram account. Now, does that maybe mean that you don't, you know, you're not as open with people who might want to connect with you, or, you know, everyone has that fear of missing out. You know, no one wants, well, what if that girl that I met at the party, like, wants to reach out to me and DM me and we're not connected on Instagram. Like, you really need to lock these things down. And the platforms leave them open and public by default because it's good for their business model. Because being open and it's good for engagement, yep, is what it comes down to.
And engagement drives the money. That's what the platforms, yep, are built on. So I am a huge nerd about behavioral economics, and no one turned the channel because it's the econ version of what Dave's saying. And basically, the principle that Dave and I are talking about is to understand how humans actually behave and make the technology account for that. In other words, have the defaults on these platforms set to private. It does take time for parents, and I have taken the time, not perfectly, to go down the rabbit hole. It takes forever to find all of the privacy settings. For example, and this is just a stupid one, Dave, but I wanted to bring it up, Venmo. Your entire contact list, yep, on Venmo is public, and it's a, yes, different privacy setting than is your transaction setting public. Yep. It's two different things, and they do this all over the place. I think that's, yep, an incredibly important tip, Dave. Because we've got limited time, one, will you please come back with me, and we will have a longer form discussion about this? And sure. Secondly, we just saw, I want to talk about cybersecurity from a national security perspective. We just saw in Spain, sure, and Portugal what appeared potentially to be a hack shut down their grid. How are we doing here in the U.S.? Do we have good grid cybersecurity infrastructure?
Well, some of you may have heard of this thing called Volt Typhoon. Which is a name that we've given some of the Chinese government hacking activities that have breached pretty much all sectors of critical infrastructure in the United States over a period of several years, and was designed, you know, we've come out and really publicly said this, was designed to essentially stage on our critical infrastructure so that the Chinese government could, at a time and place of their choosing, for instance, in the event of an invasion of Taiwan, take action in these sectors, whether it is shutting down, you know, water treatment facilities, pieces of the grid, and probably coinciding with pretty aggressive information operations, meaning, you know, targeted propaganda, actual fake news, video clips, things of that nature on platforms like TikTok, which is controlled by ByteDance, you know, which is a Chinese company. And there's, mm-hmm, no such thing as a private company in China, especially when you have political officers at the company that are beholden to the Chinese Communist Party. So we're not doing well when it comes to you know, the overall cybersecurity of our critical infrastructure. And it's not because there aren't good people doing good work and trying to keep things secure. It's just that we have such, again, a patchwork of systems, of processes, of capabilities, with the resources that go into these things are kind of all over the place. So you have large, you know, municipalities like New York City that are very well prepared. You have states that have put a lot of money at the state level, like Texas, into cybersecurity. And then you have the have-nots, you know, smaller school districts, smaller utilities, smaller counties that don't have the same resources. And so that's why, you know, I think there's, you know, this concern over the cuts that CISA, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency at the federal level, is now facing. And, you know, I look at this holistically. It's not just the technical, you know, with something like critical infrastructure security. Yes, there's a technical component, but a lot of the nation state cyber actors like Russia and China also have a component to their attacks that are in the information domain to cause destabilization, to cause people to lose trust in institutions, whether it is media, whether it is government, whether it is elections. And we've seen this play out time and time and time again in Europe, in Africa, in the United States. This is, you know, this is part of their playbook. And it's, you know, this is foreign adversary aggression. And I hope that's something that as Americans, we can all agree needs to be something that we defend against.
Folks, that's Dave Schroeder. He's the UW-Madison Research Director for the Wisconsin Security Research Consortium. Dave, will you stick around for one more segment? Because I want to ask you about the idea of disinformation and destabilization and mistrust of institutions and how people can be savvier consumers of information online. What are some of the hallmarks of those things? Just like we were talking about the hallmarks of misinformation. Do you have time for another segment, my friend?
Yes.
Oh, wonderful. Folks, if you have a question, Jack from Merrimack, I know you are on the lines. I didn't get to you. Please text it in 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. You touched upon something that I think is really important. And if you could expand on this, and then we'll kind of talk about some best practices when we come back when it comes to disinformation. Cyber warfare, cyber attacks aren't just about shutting down a grid or shutting down an air traffic control system. They rely upon and interact with the cyber-based disinformation, misinformation, destabilization, information environment. That's what you're saying, right, Dave? I'm hearing that correctly. These are related phenomena.
Well, there's always a human element in any of these chains that we're talking about. You can have purely technical attacks, but these are systems that are all run and mediated by humans, and humans are the weakest link.
Folks, we're going to come back. We're going to talk about the threat that online external nation state adversarial actors, the online destabilization campaigns that we face here and abroad. Keep it locked. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.